Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The best things happen after dark. Nightclubs are the ultimate spaces for self-expression, escape, music, socializing, and forgetting for a moment the outside world. Going out is a way to discover ourselves, who we really are, what we really like. We find new friends and fall in love on the dance floor. As humans, we like to move to a beat, and there's nothing like a good night out. I'm Jody Harsh. I'm a DJ and producer, and I've spent most of my life going out. I know how to tear up a dance floor, and in this podcast, I chat with my guests about how club culture and going out has helped shape their identities and inform their work. In season one, we were locked down, unable to partake in nocturnal activities, so we could only talk about our memories of nightlife. Now we're back out there, and I've got a truly amazing guest list for season two. So let's dive into those hazy memory banks and hit the floor. This is Life of the Party. Today's guest embodies the true spirit of dance music. Born in Kentucky, her DJ roots began in the DJ booth of Chicago's iconic Smart Bar. And it's a priority of hers to challenge the status quo, both on and off the dance floor. Her DJ shows are legendary. She's regarded as one of the finest selectors in the game. Her remixes and productions pay homage to dance music's roots and showcase a fresh edge. Her taste and curation skills have produced Residency Series and Dua Lipa's Club Future Nostalgia remix project. And she is, of course, the voice behind the conversation in Fred Again's We've Lost Dancing. It's the Blessed Madonna. How are you?
Oh, just thrilled to be here having this totally natural chat with you.
Absolutely. And we're finally together.
Finally together.
We've been wanting this to happen
this
for a long time.
This was foretold by the ancients.
I want to have a really fun chat just about nightlife and how it's influenced your life, your career, your personality, and I'd assume quite a lot.
Pretty much everything.
Your entire
I don't have
being.
Hobbies.
Exactly, same.
That's it.
What was your earliest memory of partying? It could be like, was there a birthday party when you were a child? Like,
well, I grew up in this sort of weird situation. My grandmother was took care of all of the children of the professors that my grandfather was a professor at the school where he taught, and so we would have these sort of massive parties every year, and she would, I'm a Halloween baby, so she would take two bundt cakes and turn them into a pumpkin.
Oh, okay.
And so we would have Halloween costume parties.
Are you a Halloween fan?
I am.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
I'm crazy about horror movies, love the season, love the, at least the concept of getting dressed up, all of it.
Yeah, the concept, but what about the execution?
I'm pretty good at it.
Yeah, do you dress up?
Yeah, sometimes. Yeah, I met my husband on Halloween. My friend was dressed as Andy Warhol, and I was dressed as Edie Sedgwick.
Okay, amazing.
It's pretty good. And my husband was dressed as Michael Myer from Halloween.
Oh yeah, amazing. Yeah,
but with a real hatchet.
What would your dream club from the past be?
I mean, I think you got to say Paradise Garage.
Mm-hmm.
Just for every possible reason. I've heard so much about it from Joe Shanahan, who owns Smart Bar, who went there quite a lot.
Yeah.
And from people who were, you know, regular visitors. And so I would love to see the way that it, or the Warehouse.
Mm-hmm.
The Warehouse. It's another one that, because I have so many people in my life who have memories of it,
yeah,
that I would love to have that experience firsthand.
And what about that, the Loft, for example?
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Any of that kind of era.
I would not turn any of them down.
And no invitations turned down. I'd go for Studio 54. Which,
sure.
You know,
oh, yeah. I mean, that would be
earlier.
Incredible.
Yeah, of course. Just to see exactly what it was like.
Yeah.
Yeah. What was your first ever DJ gig like? Do you remember it well?
Yeah, I played a party called Bass Fetish.
Right. With a great name, actually.
With a very classy flyer that was like, can we say dirty words on it?
100%. As more the better.
Okay, yeah. Great. The flyer was basically the needle for a turntable and a tongue coming out, and it just kind of looked like a cum shot.
Got it. Okay.
Like there was a little rope of jizz between the tongue and the...
Queer party?
They kind of all were at that point.
Yeah, there was no...
In Kentucky, there was no real differentiation between one thing or another. It was just anybody that didn't fit anywhere else.
Got it. Now, I've heard you say that you've DJed everywhere from empty clubs to burger bars on your journey, which has spanned a couple of decades,
yeah.
Right? So how... you're obviously now positioned right at the top of lineups. And I feel the same about my journey. Like it's been a slog. Like we've put the work in. We've played the empty dance floor.
20-year overnight sensation.
Exactly. So how important has that long journey been to get to where you are now? What have you learned? Like how important was that slog?
I think there's a lot of you take less things for granted. Because you know how fast it can be snatched away and how hard it is to even pay the rent mm-hmm. is such a big success.
Yeah.
In any capacity. And then anything over that just feels like gravy. I think probably my temperament is a little bit more even keeled if like I had gotten what I wanted when I was 23 years old.
Ego would have been...
I didn't even know if it would have been that as much as it would have been. I would have just had a nervous breakdown.
Got it.
I'm naturally kind of a shy person in my real life. And so that part of it, the internet part of it is so difficult that I don't think as a younger person I would have been prepared to deal with the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune.
Totally. And the comment, like you were saying, the internet, like the comments on social media and all of that kind of stuff.
Right. Right. I wasn't ready for it when it happened in the first place.
Right.
And then, but I think to, you know, shave 10, 15 years off of that, and I would have just, they would have had to section me.
Right.
Straight up.
Right. And you were the booker at the legendary Smart Bar, right?
That's right,
yeah. So you're such a curator of talent. Tell us about what's special about that place. I've actually never been.
Well, Smart Bar is amazing. And it goes without saying that you would love Queen on Sundays.
Derek.
That's Derek. And it's Michael Serafini Garrett David and... So many legendary hosts have come out of there, too. I mean, half of the cast of Drag Race has been through there.
Yeah.
In fact, Dan Pollack, who is Shea Coulee's partner, Dan and I worked together in the office at Smart Bar. Dan was the visual director for Metro and Smart Bar, and he was a huge part in really making Queen really for the queens. Mm-hmm. Because Dan was so immersed in drag culture, and he really insisted on that part of it and making sure that we had really top-notch hosts and people like, you know, I mean, everybody, so many people, everybody, you know, legends like JoJo Baby was already there, but Dan really brought in like lots of young, fresh, really avant-garde queens like Sissy Spastic, she doesn't work in nightlife anymore, but she's just incredible. And so many other people, you know, obviously Shay and Lucy Stuhl and all of those people who are just such boundary pushers. And, you know, to be even a little part of that was such a huge deal.
Yeah.
Queen was definitely one of the things that kind of hung in there. It started off and it was the little party that could. I mean, there were nights when it was just 50 people that would show up.
Right.
And what I really mean is Derek and everybody, they just hung in there.
Built it up
and it became this incredible dynasty.
Yeah.
And the club itself, I mean...
They call it the home of house, don't they?
Yeah, so we are celebrating our 40th anniversary this year.
That's incredible.
It's insane. Yeah.
Are you going over for that?
I am,
As you should.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And it'll be a real cast of characters. You know, I'm sure Jamie Principal. I mean, it's going to be everybody and their mother. And it's been in the same place the whole time.
Yeah.
Same owner.
Yeah. It's amazing when one of these, when you get one of these nightclubs, just like literally a space, four walls that breeds so much talent. It's just amazing.
Yeah, I went back and looked at the calendar from previous talent buyers because it's one calendar that's been digitized.
Right.
Looking back, you know, 10, 15 years, and it's just crazy. It's like, oh, you know, got Moody Man on Wednesday night. Yeah. 50 people showed up.
Yeah.
You know, like just real casual, like incredible lineups and that persisted even in times when Chicago's nightlife was not so strong.
Yeah.
You know, Chicago is not like London.
Right.
London is kind of always going off somewhere.
Yeah.
And that is not true in Chicago.
Why do you think that is? And I think there's a whole ecosystem that's just in Chicago, right, as well.
That's right. Well, I think there's a lot of factors. One is for sure racism. Black events have been disproportionately targeted, and beyond that, just all of the factors that make it hard to be black in Chicago, from redlining in neighborhoods to, you know, just all kinds of it's this massive, nebulous, systemic thing. Some of it is just about waves. The city itself, though, goes through waves. Some of it is just house culture. There's a lot of it's an old scene, so there's a lot of old business, and it can be very divided along certain lines. But then there are times when that goes away. I mean, the Chosen Few picnic, it's, you know, it's 50,000 people, and it's a reunion. It's literally like a family reunion. So it's a complex thing.
Yeah.
But when it's good, it's better than anywhere in the world.
Right, right. Is there a culture of homophobia in the city?
This is just my opinion, for whatever it's worth.
Yeah.
But I say this as a person who knows, you know, a lot of the people involved, and certainly from booking shows at Smart Bar and for the time that I was there working with the Frankie Knuckles Foundation, and just being around stuff, working at the label that I worked at. There is this sort of important impulse right now to go and make sure that the queer parts of dance culture are written into the history books, and that it is not lost, because a lot of that, there's constant erasure of that going on.
Totally. And black culture. And black culture. Yeah.
And then on the other hand, there is the other side of that, is that there is a tendency to kind of utopianize the history of dance culture.
Like, and it's always been for all.
That it was this kind of queer utopia.
I see, yeah.
And that is partially true. And it is true in spaces and waves and moments. But it's also about the collision between worlds as much as anything. There are many, many, many... so much of nightlife culture in Chicago is queer and accepting and all of those things. The other side of it is there's a bunch of super homophobic religious guys.
Right, right, of course, yeah.
Super duper homophobic straight religious guys. There's also a bunch of guys who are closeted.
Yeah, the people running the city, do you mean?
I mean, just people in the scene. Right. I mean, the early club culture had all of those things in it, and a lot of it is very, very, very gay. But some of those guys that are absolutely foundational pieces of dance music culture are straight, hyper-religious, conservative, and deeply homophobic.
And that shocks me, being in nightlife culture, that it would attract.
It doesn't shock me.
Right, right.
It's all of those things. And so for me, I think that some of that collision is also about what it is. That like, if you took Boom Boom Room on Mondays, which was a real dynasty that ran forever and ever and ever in Chicago, and I think there may even still be a version of it now, very gay. The JoJo Baby was a host, you know, like very, very, very gay, but also... like the cop that lived next door to me would go.
Right, right.
And it's a crossing point.
Yeah.
While it may skew gay and gay friendly and queer and trans and queens and everything in the world, it's not just that. And that tension is a part of the culture too.
Right, got it. Let's talk about Berlin. Because I'm sure I saw you play at the Panorama Bar once. I'm sure I'm
the returning champion.
Yeah, big fan of the city, to say the least.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that I would have a career without Berlin for sure.
Right, interesting. Why is that?
They were the first ones to book me overseas.
Right. Okay. The very first trip.
The reason I got a plane ticket was because of Panorama Bar on a Sunday night.
Tell us what you love about I was with Jessie Ware last week doing this podcast. She's never been to Panorama Bar, so I was describing the way the blinds open.
I want to take her.
Oh, let's a girls trip.
I just got my next date. So
when are you playing?
I can't say.
Okay, but coming up,
it's coming. Maybe we'll have to kidnap
Jessie. Yeah, totally.
You know, it was totally terrifying to me because I had never been out of America.
Right.
I was 35 or 36. I don't know how old, but, you know, I'd been DJing for like 15 or 16 years. I started DJing in 1999, and I finally got the job and wanted it at Smart Bar. And literally the day that I moved into the desk at the good job, I got the call that I had been offered a show at Panorama Bar, which seemed insane to me. Like, I didn't think it was possible. And,
did you feel like someone was playing a trick on you?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I called my boyfriend at the time, now husband, and woke him up because he had just been a few months before, and he had said, "Oh, this room, it's for you."
Mm.
And I thought, yeah, right, dude.
Yeah.
You know, not a chance, because I wasn't playing hardly anywhere. And then in a period of 6 months or a year or however long it was, things started to change. I had started to put out records and so on and so forth. And then the offer came, and I didn't even have a passport.
Right.
And the U.S. government was shut down at the time because of a budget thing. And so it was like, can I get my passport in time? And it was this mad rush. And Zernell, the great, amazing disco DJ.
Okay, yeah.
And Perfumier, he's got a new perfume called Disco, which is meant to be lovely. That's,
okay, neat. I did not know about this.
Shout out to him. he's a man who loves the scent.
Okay.
But
a nose, we call them a nose.
He's got a nose.
That's the industry term for a perfume.
He is a nose.
Yes, I love that.
I love
it. we're ears.
Yes, right. Yeah. But Zernell had to teach me how to pack.
Right.
He was like, when you pack, you're going to have these kinds of problems with weight limits on records, so you're going to need this, and make sure that you have this kind of light in your bag, make sure you bring backup needles, and then do this and this and this, and then when you get to immigration, this is what you tell them.
Right, with no visa. It was like
three words you need to learn: I'm on holiday.
Yeah.
He was like, what are you saying? I was like, I'm on holiday.
Yeah.
I'm on holiday.
That's what I used to do when I used to go to America before I got visas. So nervous going through American customs.
Oh, because if they get you, they get you over there.
Banned for 10 years.
Totally.
I have an O-1 visa now, but oh my God, the nerve of queuing up at JFK.
It's true. I'm on holiday.
Yeah.
Like, don't bring any records. Don't bring anything.
No.
Yeah, so I got there and I was terrified, and my hands were shaking, and I went on, and it took about 15 minutes for the terror to wear off. But once it did, I was like, it felt as much like any calling that you can imagine. Mm-hmm. Like, I imagine it's how like priests feel, or doctors, firemen, or whatever.
And you just felt right.
Yeah.
Home. Kind of vibe. I read somewhere that you played Snacks in Berlin, the infamous sex club.
I have played.
I love that you've just gone across all these different types of dance floors. How was it playing at? It's a fetish party, isn't it? I've actually never been, but
yeah. So there's two Snackses.
Okay.
Snacks Eye.
Yeah.
There's two Snacks Eye a year. One is on Easter weekend usually, and then there's another one, I think in the fall, and they have themes.
Yeah.
Mine, I believe, was Snacks FC. So it was everybody in little football outfits.
Oh, cute.
It was actually very
That's
hot.
That's cute. Okay.
My husband loves football, and he came with me, and he just loves the club anyways. So he came in his little Ukrainian football outfit.
Right.
It was very cute.
Yeah.
And actually, I took Derek Carter.
Yeah.
So I was playing in Snacks, and then I was going to play upstairs at Panorama also.
Snacks is at Berghain.
It is.
Oh, I see.
So it's in the laboratory.
I see. And it's sexy, right? It's fetish night.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. It's like, it's sex. Period.
Yes.
Yeah. Got it. I love that you've just played all these different types of dance floors, and that's just like weaves into the tapestry of...
Yeah. I mean, you know, I when I started going to clubs and stuff, I mean, I was always sneaking into gay, even leather clubs as a kid.
Right.
Like 16 years old.
Yeah.
Because I'm from Lexington, Kentucky, which has quite a big leather scene.
Really?
It does.
Interesting.
And we had our own warehouse, which was quite draggy, but also like industrial was quite big then.
Right.
It's like drag and industrial and punk, and then also kind of like, you know, Euro disco.
Okay.
And, you know, it was... And a club called The Connection, which had drag shows, but then also had quite a big dance floor and lots of very like high energy and stuff.
Okay. I didn't know that this pocket of queerness and openness existed in Kentucky. I've never been to the city. So.
Well, the South is quite complex.
Right. And I guess as a reaction to how it's very religious, isn't it? And
it is, but then like the punk part of it is like the B-52s.
Right, of course.
There's a lot of that kind of like just insane, chaotic gay shit.
Got it. Love. Which we love.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I always think of us DJs as storytellers. Do you play differently depending on your mood or the room?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't plan anything.
You don't plan? That was going to be my next question.
Yeah, I don't plan anything. I just kind of go in and try to figure it out.
Yeah.
I'll make kind of a general playlist.
A little folder in the
Right, but I bring everything. Yeah. So, I try to react to what's going on. Usually I'll try to pick what I think the first record will be.
Yeah.
So I don't walk up and I'm like, oh my God, what am I doing?
Yeah, like he's going, scrolling through, right. Going, ah,
and if you know
you've got 2 minutes.
Right, if you know who's playing before you can kind of guess just at least generally what's going to happen. Like, you know, this last weekend, Honey Dijon was on before me. So I knew approximately where she would end up. I knew that it would be, you know,
totally
housey to a degree.
Yeah.
And so I know how to come off the back of her set. And so usually I'll have kind of like the very beginning plan, but then it's just like reading the room and trying to not screw it up.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, that's like the story of our lives. Don't screw up. You curated and exec produced Dua Lipa's remix album, and I loved it. I am such a fan of the remix album as well. And I guess it sort of started with Eurythmics. I think were the first people to do like an actual remix album.
I think you might be right.
Yeah.
And Madonna also was...
You Can Dance
was also in there. She was quite quite out over the edge on that.
100%. And that was Shep Pettibone, right? Did You Can Dance?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was basically most of her remixes was for many, many, many years.
Yeah. So how did that come about? How did the Dua Lipa project like form?
Well, I had done a remix for her her project that she did with Mark Ronson and Diplo.
Yeah.
And
I remember. Yeah, great song.
That's a great record.
Electricity.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So and then we met at Block 9.
Yeah. In Glastonbury.
Yeah.
Fabulous.
We met there and she was perfectly lovely.
Yeah.
She is just as lovely as you want her to be.
Yeah.
It's not fake, which is almost like a terrifying thing.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
anybody can be like that talented and also beautiful and completely lovely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not fair.
Yeah.
She's like 11 feet tall.
Yeah.
You know, looks great in a cat suit and is the nicest person in the world.
Yeah. Okay.
when the lockdown happened, I had just run home at top speed from Australia so that I didn't get stuck over there.
Yeah.
And
I was just there last week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great
love,
place.
Love.
Great place to get stuck.
Absolutely.
Quite far away from home. I think
very far
away. I have great friends there.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I don't think I would have liked to have been away from London for 2 years.
No.
No.
It's far away from home.
It's very far away from home.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
So it happened quite organically. She just reached out and was like, let's do a mixtape version of this.
Yeah.
And I knew that I would have access to samples. I knew that I would also be asked to make new work for it. And that I would do some of the remixing and essentially also kind of create some things from scratch, and that I would remix all the remixes.
Yeah.
And then mix it all together.
Got it. So curating just this sonic project.
I mean, everything. I had to engineer everything.
Did you start that just as we went into lockdown then? Was that...
That's right, yeah. Right. So just at home in my attic.
Right,
and wow. There was no one else.
Wow.
So commissioned all the remixes, waited for them to come in, and then while I was waiting for them to come in, I made the remix of Love is a Religion, which I think is really actually the only version of it. There really is no original.
Okay.
Or not one that's ever appeared in any kind of like real capacity.
Oh, so that wasn't on her original album?
No.
I see, right. So it's a real mixed bag of just like...
Right, yeah. I had the vocals from it and I just produced it all over from the beginning. And then I was asked to do the Levitating remix.
Yeah.
And they asked who I would want, and it was Dua and I both asked for the same people.
Yeah, I mean, that really is... I mean... It doesn't really get better.
We're like, what if we could get Madonna and Missy Elliott on it? And she had said the same thing, and it was like, okay. And then they both said yes immediately.
Yeah. Yeah. So it doesn't get better than that.
It does not get better than
that's
that.
That's like it.
And they were both great. And I remember when I got a text message with Missy's part on it. And I was like, I cannot believe this is happening.
And you just got scared to open it. We're like, looking at your phone.
I knew how great it would be, but I was like, And then we got Madonna's bits. And there's actually an alternative take that didn't come out where she actually does Lucky Star for a minute.
Oh, my gosh. That has to come out in some form at some point one day.
If it does, it will not be because of me. I put it into the vault in the back of the warehouse next to the Ark of the Covenant.
Got it.
And then I finished it, and I was very lucky to have Mike Dean mix it. He's incredible.
Amazing, yeah. He works with Madonna a lot.
He does. Wanted Mike Dean to mix the record, so it was such an honor to have that done. And then all the other things started to come in, and there's the sample clearance process. So basically I treated every remix as something that was to be remixed then. So all the little bits, if you compare like the originals to what ended up happening.
Yeah.
It's kind of like I remixed the remixes and then turned it into an album and did it completely alone in my pajamas.
Amazing.
No real studio, nothing. Everything was just...
Did you have to just switch off from the news outside and stuff, and just were you in a bit of a bubble just working on that project? Because it's such a vast project.
Yeah, there was a period where I was working like 10, 12 hours a day.
Yeah.
But it was great for me because, it was the longest I'd ever had to like work alone.
Yeah.
And to just try and make a million different things. There were things that didn't make it onto the album. There were samples that didn't get cleared. There's a whole new version of the beginning of it that didn't happen that had another pop star involved who shall remain nameless. But it was some legendary business.
Oh, right.
And to be working with all of those people. And then, you know, I was, of course, taking up all the... all the hobbies, the little house on the prairie hobbies that everybody tried to do. Like, I was like, oh.
Banana bread.
My husband did banana bread, yeah. and I did embroidery. I was sitting there embroidering one day and do a face pad. She's like, how far along are we in this? Do we have time for Gwen Stefani? And I was like, yes. Yes, we do.
We'll make time for Gwen Stefani.
Yes. Yeah. And it's just incredible.
Yeah. How did you approach the project from the point of view of the nightclub? Because I feel like you can really fill certain club spaces in certain tracks.
Totally. Yeah.
Were you sort of envisioning this is this dance floor? This is.
Well, there was the question of whether it would be radio future nostalgia or club future nostalgia.
Right. Right.
Because there was a part of me that thought about it that it would be like an old school Chicago dance radio mixtape.
Yeah.
Like a WBMX kind of thing. But then it ended up feeling more clubby. And I think because I was just feeling really homesick for clubs.
Totally. I was going to say, because we'd literally lost the dance floor in that moment. Like, you kind of helped keep the dance floor alive. And conversations going on about the importance of nightlife and all that kind of stuff happened around the release of this.
Yeah, like for me, like Levitating and Love is Religion were definitely things that I imagined how they would sound in Panorama Bar.
Right. Yeah.
And I'm sure that other people were that way. I think we were all kind of in that headspace.
Yeah, yeah. I guess you kind of, with your head sort of still on the dance floor while you were making this project, like, helped that homesickness that you described.
Yeah, and I was just totally weirded out. I had no idea what was going to happen. I mean, I had a shield the whole time. So I was actually in the house for like a year, a year.
Yeah.
No contact with anyone. I think I got to leave the house like less than 10 times.
What a fucking mad time we've just lived through.
Completely.
And I still my head's blown when I think about, like, when a year ago we literally were in lockdown.
When it was over, it was like there was this period of adjustment.
Yeah.
I felt like when you come up too deep from the ocean and you get the bends.
Yeah.
I started to go into like rooms because I started my album and was suddenly in sessions with people all the time.
Yeah.
And I hadn't been in a room with anybody other than my husband.
Yeah.
And it completely flipped me out.
Right, right. Also, of course, we've lost dancing with Fred again. Spoke to people because there was this sort of universal feeling about the importance of nightlife and conversations going on about that, which, you know, is this single really, really kind of pushed as well. And it was empathetic. Is that right? Why am I saying that?
It is, yeah, empathetic.
It is. Oh, it's a big question, but what does the notion of nightlife and the nightclub mean to you? That's obviously a huge question.
You know, it's changed for me. In some ways, I think now when I'm writing and talking about nightlife, there is this kind of space from it, even though it's what I do for my job, at least part of the time. I think that being in lockdown for so long changed me in ways that I don't know that you can totally come back from. And it made me look at things at arm's length. And so a lot of times when I'm writing or whatever, I feel like I'm writing about memory rather than like direct apprehension of whatever the thing is, even though I'm there all the time now. And that will probably change because I'm getting ready to go on tour for real.
Yeah.
And which is going to kill me and also send me into a total downward spiral.
How do you deal with touring? I don't work very well when I'm tired. So
I'm quite good at being tired.
Right.
I am one of the all-time great sleep deprivation champions.
I'm the opposite, which is not great for a touring DJ.
It is not.
Yeah. How do you deal with it? The traveling?
I think the fact that before I was even on the road, like for a living, because I grew up being on the Midwest rave circuit, which is a sort of similar situation.
No sleep, basically.
And it is a skill that you can learn.
Mm-hmm.
It is not an easy skill to learn, but I'm a very good power napper.
Mm.
I sleep well on planes.
Mm-hmm.
I sleep well sitting up.
Mm.
All of that stuff. But I mean, it's a pretty damaging thing.
Yeah.
No question about it.
Yeah. For me, it's more, it's a mental thing. It's not just like feeling exhausted.
It's not physical for me at all. It's mental.
Exactly. It's just the inner saboteur and all those things.
I'm not going to lie. I had a little freak out this weekend before I played.
Right.
I did.
Yeah.
It's like, oh my God, how am I going to go do an impression of myself?
Right.
There's this kind of, like, I don't think it's even imposter syndrome because I know that it's me.
Yeah.
All that stuff is real. And it's not like I feel like I can't DJ or I'm going to go in and mess up or something like that. It's like the person at home finally got a second to breathe.
Mm.
And I got used to being able to be that person and to enjoy actual closeness with other people and normal things. And I like to get up at 5:30 or 6 in the morning.
Right.
To be a boring married lady. I love that stuff.
Yeah. And you just had the opportunity to do that for a year and a half. Now it's all back to it.
And I had never had that.
Right.
I was like a raver all the way up until college. I went to college and went straight back into it. Moved to Chicago like the next day.
Yeah.
Was immediately, in one way or another, always in the nightlife. And so some people over lockdown didn't know what to do because they were so invested in that one thing. And for me, it was like, oh, this is great.
Yeah, but, yeah. Like, breathe.
Right. Like, oh, my space. God. I'm going to catch up on all of the true crime TV
shows. I was like Real Housewives.
Oh,
like,
my God.
Let's go.
Oh, yeah. 90 Day Fiancé.
Yeah. Do you love a bit of trash TV?
Oh, my God.
Love trash TV.
I love, I'm crazy about 90 Day Fiancé. That's right. The one that I wait for it to come on. I get up and watch it.
I've never seen it.
Oh, it's, oh.
Okay.
I'm giving you a gift.
Okay.
I'm giving you a gift.
Have you done The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills?
Oh, yeah, totally.
It is like Shakespeare.
The way
those narratives are weaved
together. Oh, it's
the best
so
thing.
Good.
Yeah.
Honestly, I don't trust anybody that doesn't love trashy
Thank
TV.
Thank you. Exactly.
It's so good.
Do you think you'll approach touring differently now that we've come out of lockdown after what we've just... Yeah.
I mean, I am.
Yeah.
I mean, right now I'm super booked up.
Yeah.
In a good way. But really kind of leaning towards those daytime shows.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. A late night's difficult now,
it's
right?
It's so hard.
Yeah. Like a post 4 a.m. bedtime, I'm like 3 days after, I'm still feeling it. Like,
and you know what? The thing is like, I think one thing, we can leave all this like, you're not grateful for your job if you're exhausted business, or you're not grateful enough if you have any feelings about being away from your home, or whatever. It's 2022. We're leaving that in the past because it is normal to feel that way.
Yeah.
It's normal to have those feelings, and you're going to do a better job and be more grateful for it if you create a situation that isn't totally antithetical to who you are as a person the other 5 days a week.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to do that, and fortunately because of music production that was the thing that came out of lockdown that changed everything and made there be a kind of counterpoint to Miss Hands in the Air.
Totally. Yeah. Almost like a second half of the job type thing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if any, it's 50% of it or more for me
at this point. Yeah. Diversity and equality obviously is a founding principle in dance music, and you're constantly very vocal about addressing the huge gender inequality in clubland and platforming the marginalized voices without whom house music obviously wouldn't exist.
True story.
Yeah. Do you feel like lineups are more inclusive of female presenting and queer and non-binary and trans DJs now? Or are we still...
Oh, it's totally different than it used to be.
Right.
That's to say that it was incomprehensibly bad. And
we've
now
seen the lineups where it's just white straight men.
For sure. And so, I mean, and there are people who have the actual numbers on that. Mm. And I appreciate people who, you know, I think it is really important to not just kind of like eyeball it, but to also do the data part of it.
Yeah.
But this is, you know, it can't just be the same people over and over again. Mm-hmm. Like, we have to make sure that we're leaving the ladder down for other people. And it's really, really, really important. And I'm trying very hard, like on my radio show and also on shows that that I'm on, yeah, to make sure that those concepts are not just being pushed. It's not like I've got enough jobs.
Yeah, yeah.
It can't just be. It can't be just about me. It has to be about other people.
Yeah.
And I think there's a whole series of questions that have to happen there. You know, it's one thing to have trans people on your lineup. It's another thing to make sure that they're safe in the club.
Totally.
And because it's very easy to be like, well, here's this one person and we're going to protect them and we're going to give them money and all these things. And then your security bro at the door has no idea what's going on. There's not proper bathrooms. There's not, you know, all of that kind of stuff. The issues are so big and complex that if you representation matters, but it is not enough.
Totally. Yeah, that's interesting. I came to a residency at XOYO several years ago as well. Do you still love curating lineups and putting the concept of a show together that's not just you turning up and DJing? Like, do you just love putting together, weaving together that story?
I love it.
Yeah.
Going
back to the smart bar. And,
I love it. Yeah. Oh, of course. I mean, it's like being able, it's like meta DJing.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And when I look back at those lineups, I'm so proud of them.
Yeah. Do you want to do more of those as well?
Oh, I would do anything like that. Yeah. I mean, my fantasy is to someday be able to just primarily work out of London and have a kind of destination show.
Got
you
it.
Know that we're
like someone would do a Vegas.
Right.
You do a London.
Can you imagine?
Oh, it'd be fabulous.
How great it would be to be Celine Dion.
Oh, have you seen her in Vegas?
No,
nor have I. I don't think she's doing it anymore, is she? But
no, but
I love Vegas. I love Vegas because it's so trashy. Two nights, in and out.
Couldn't, it's so couldn't trashy.
Do. I love that. Obviously, you know, it's like...
It is. Yeah. I mean, Vegas, if you're listening, it's no shade. It's
no,
love.
No shade. No, I'm... All no, love. I love the artificial. I mean...
Oh, my God. There's this one spa in a hotel there that looks like... The set on Remember the Time.
Oh, what, the Michael Jackson?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, it looks like
in
that.
The Luxor Hotel. Right. I know exactly where you mean. Yeah.
It's crazy. It's like gold on the inside and swans and all this. I love it.
Fabulous. I love that you can look out of your balcony and there's the Eiffel Tower and then there's a pyramid and it's just like...
Oh, heaven. I'm telling you, as a little girl that grew up in trashy parts of Kentucky, you know, my family, we had two trailers.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So anything like that, I just love it.
Yeah. Now, your name has religious connotations.
It does.
Are you purposefully evoking the idea of the nightclub as a church?
You know, actually, it was really more, I guess, simple than that.
Right.
My family is, we're recovering Catholics.
Right.
And my grandfather and my mom are particularly dedicated. My name used to be Black Madonna, which is a specific kind of icon. Mm-hmm. It's like the patron saint of Poland and Barcelona. Right. And I changed it to Blessed Madonna to get the heck out of the way of Black Lives Matter. Mm-hmm. But it's same concept. And really, it's just honestly, as much as anything, a tribute to my mom.
Yeah. Oh, nice. I always love to know what's on a DJ's rider. Would you share any kind of
very
strange things?
Very little for me.
Right.
Because I don't drink anymore.
Right. Yeah.
I used to drink. I mean, I still would love a drink, but for the most part, I don't drink.
Yeah.
It used to be Kentucky bourbon. Because there is no bourbon that doesn't come from Kentucky. I don't care what anyone tells you.
Okay.
It's like champagne. You know what
it
I mean?
It has to come from France. Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
it has to come from the right place.
Got it.
Bourbon comes from Kentucky.
Okay.
If it's not, it's just whiskey or whatever it
okay,
is.
Okay. Okay. Do you have a bottle of bourbon?
Yeah. So usually like Four Roses or Bullet or Van Winkle if you get lucky.
Oh, like, I thought you meant you needed four long-stemmed roses.
No,
you don't press play until No.
Four roses is the name of a bourbon.
Got it.
It's really good.
It's very difficult. She wants a bunch of flowers.
No. And then other than that, I used to have, because I love Coca-Cola, I also don't drink that anymore. Everything is, I'm so boring now. Yeah. I don't eat sugar and I don't drink. So now it's just still water.
Yeah.
And like hummus and cheese.
Oh, yeah. No, healthy snacks.
Healthy snacks. Because sometimes you get in, you haven't had a chance to eat.
Do you put a phone charger on? That's a handy one. iPhone chargers.
Great. Oh, no, I don't. I travel with all of that stuff in my bag.
Yeah. Same, but you know.
I'm crazy. If you've looked in my bag right now, you could go to Antarctica with what's in my bag right now. I'm ready.
Okay.
I have like all of my chargers, converters, pills, passport, everything. Anything that I'm supposed to be taking or needing.
Yeah.
Other than like missing a pair of clean underwear, but other than that, like my bag that I carry around on the street, you could go.
Yeah.
You could leave the country for like 6 months.
Have you ever lost a passport?
No.
No, that would be a nightmare.
No, I've never lost a passport. I've never lost a bag.
Touch wood.
And I've only... I know, right? My wooden head. And I've only ever missed one connecting flight.
Oh, that's a...
No, I'm sorry. I had one flight, one connecting flight, and then I've had a couple of canceled flights. But I've never, of my own mistake or traffic or anything like that, I've never missed a flight.
Do you get to an airport like hours and hours early? Yeah, me too. Like super anal about that. I'll get to an airport 4 hours before takeoff.
No problem.
The pressure of arriving like an hour and 20 minutes before your plane takes off. Absolutely not.
Plus, if I get to the airport early enough, I can spend a bunch of money that I shouldn't be spending.
Totally. Chill in the lounge, buy some perfume you don't need.
That's it. Every time.
Yeah.
That lady in the Louis Vuitton store...
Oh.
She's stoked to see me every time
she's
I
fancy.
Come.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I always forget a scarf. A scarf and I go in and buy a scarf.
Fabulous.
Not bad. It's pretty good.
If it's not quite as pumping as you'd like it, what's a track that you'd play to get the crowd really going? Like, what's your go-to?
My go-to, a pumping track. You know, I think the low-key, like, well, one that is... I honestly have to stop myself from playing it because it is like the best record of all time, and I've played it too many times, but I love it so much, and I actually broke down and played it in Turkey.
Yeah.
I hadn't played it in like two years.
I relapsed.
Is the Crate Bug and Jamie 326 record called Hit It and Quit.
Right. Yeah.
That record, if that does not move the room, then they're literally dead.
Yeah.
They're actual corpses.
Have you ever played any kind of like funeral or wake or anything like that?
A funeral or wake?
Yeah. I personally have.
Yes, I have.
Tell us about that.
So this is going to sound really morbid, but it's not because I'm fine.
Yeah.
But my ex-long-term boyfriend died in a motorcycle crash.
Right.
And we had a little memorial thing. Mm-hmm. And I played at that.
Yeah, that's lovely.
And it was perfectly lovely.
Yeah. Was there a dance floor, a nice dance floor moment and stuff?
Yeah, I mean, it was...
Celebrating life.
It was friendly. I think everybody was just kind of... I mean, it was just very casual, but I have. And yeah. I think he would have loved it.
Would have loved to have been there, yeah.
He would have loved it.
What's next? I know you've obviously been in the studio working on an album. What is next?
My album is almost done.
Is it? I'm very excited. I'm very excited.
I'm very excited too. I am in the death throes of it right now. I have, after the Dua Lipa project, I signed with Warner Brothers.
Yeah.
And it started off as a fairly humble project and then kind of exploded into something very different.
Yeah.
And I'm actually in the very last sessions.
Okay,
for
amazing. Right, amazing now. Collaborators.
Like literally today and the rest of the week before I go on tour. My days from this point on start at 4:30 in the morning
early.
Yeah, because I've got radio stuff happening.
Right, yeah.
There's a lot of complex maneuvering. I'm going to be filling in for some Radio 6 stuff. So I'm on that like crazy early morning nutcase shift.
Yeah, okay. I was listening to you last week, actually. I think like late morning you were on.
Yeah.
You played a D-Light record, which I love, What Is Love.
Oh.
One of my favorite records of all time. So I was like, yeah.
I am crazy about D-Light. I think they're the best.
Me too. They're Lady so Miss Keir. We need to get her back out of retirement.
Oh, my
God. She doesn't work anymore. I think she's just lives in Queens and she's kind of keeps herself to herself, as far as I know.
I'd love to make a record with
her.
Oh,
my God.
Lady Miss Keir, if you're listening, hello.
I know. Finally, you're throwing a party. Who's coming and who's playing?
Oh, my God.
Maybe pick out three names of
top
of the guest list. Those first three names on the list.
Top of the guest list. Well, since this will eventually happen, Duo, because she's just a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I would invite Shea Coulee.
Yeah.
Also a hoot.
Chicago gal.
I'd love a Chicago gal. I would invite Joe Shanahan from Smart Bar.
Uh-huh.
He's a lot of fun. I would invite Lucy Fizz.
Oh, love. Yeah. For those who don't know, Lucy Fizz, amazing dancer.
Just the best energy in the whole world.
Mad energy.
My little crowd surfing genius that she is.
Yeah, yeah.
And who would DJ? Mike Servito, Rahan, who else? Oh my God. Eris Drew.
Okay, nice. Sounds like a good night.
All my Midwesterners.
Okay, got it. Sounds like a party.
It would be a party. Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming on
today.
Oh
my God, the pleasure was all mine. You are so lovely.
Mwah.
Mwah.
Woo.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.